Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. And today is a special Sunday day that we are recording the show. Normally I'm here every Wednesday, but I'm here in the studio on Sunday with a certain special little person. Say hi. That's my daughter, who is here in the studio with me. Okay, so let us talk about why food. Remember, if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. And I often tell people, hey, look, it is impossible. It is impossible to fight an invisible army. As long as what's going on inside remains out of awareness, in other words, invisible, you're going to be engaged in a battle that you don't understand and that you will lose. But only by recognizing what is going on inside, by making that army visible, and the army is all the thoughts and ideas and things that are affecting you, that are leading to whatever is going on with food that you don't like. Only by making that army visible can you do battle and win. And when you identify the emotions and conflicts that are affecting you, because sometimes you know what they are, and sometimes they are out of awareness, but not out of operation. When you can identify them, when you make the army visible, you can challenge them, and you can fight, and you can win. So the main key to change, by the way, is identifying what you're feeling and developing new ways of soothing yourself, of responding to yourself instead of turning to food. Because when you express upsetting or painful emotions with words, comfort words, not comfort food, when you do that with words, when you respond to yourself, you don't use food for comfort or distraction. And remember, whatever is going on with food is the solution to the problem. It is not the actual problem. Just like with gardening, if you chop off a weed, it will grow back. So to eliminate the weed completely and permanently, you've got to dig out the root. And overeating, binge eating, emotional eating, stress eating, any kind of problem eating, it is the equivalent of a weed. Only by going under the surface to the root of the problem and by working through those underlying thoughts, beliefs, and emotions can you change your relationship to food. And that is what I'm here to help you do, to identify what's going on and to help you make some changes. So if you have any questions or want to join me today on the show, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to know what is weighing on you, what is eating at you, because the problem is not what you're eating, it's what's eating at you. Okay, so let's talk about how to break through the blocks to weight loss. So recently, a friend of mine who's been on and off every diet from keto to South Beach to Whole 30 to paleo to you name it, she has been on every diet. She told me that she had gone off her most recent diet big time. That's what she said. She's like, I went off my diet big time. She said she ate pizza for dinner. And, you know, to her, this was practically a crime. A food crime. She said, I can't lose weight if I eat pizza. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I ate pizza? Well, the only thing wrong was her mindset. The only thing wrong was the idea that there's something wrong with eating pizza. And so her conviction that pizza is bad is making her feel bad about herself. And that is one of the mental blocks to weight loss. There are actually five blocks to weight loss. Block number one, I was bad because I didn't stick to my diet. Or I was good because I stuck to my diet. Like, bread is bad. I was bad because I ate bread. I hear this all the time. Salad is good. I was so good today because I ate salad. Well, what you eat may be good for you or bad for you, but it doesn't reflect your character. And the trouble with this kind of good, bad thinking is that it ties your character, your likability, your good enough, your sense of self to what you are eating. You know, because when you're like, oh, I was so bad today I ate brownies, or oh, I was so bad I ate a carb, then you feel bad. And when you feel bad and you don't respond to yourself in a nurturing, loving, responsive way, you are vulnerable to using food to comfort yourself, and the cycle continues. Eating salad does not make you a good person. Eating salad is not some kind of triumph. Eating salad doesn't mean you are good. It means you are a person who ate a salad. That's it. Being a healthy eater doesn't imbue you with some kind of special characteristic that makes you better. So what determines your goodness is the way you treat others, your intention to do the right thing, being thoughtful and kind. That's, if you say I was good today, don't think about what you ate. Think about what you did. Did you let someone in on the freeway? You know, someone who's got their clicker on and everyone else is ignoring them and just not letting them in. Did you let them in? Hey, you did a good thing. Feel good about that. Not because you ate salad or something you think, or ate clean or whatever it is you think is good. And you're not a better person because you didn't eat something bad. You're not a bad person if you eat pizza. This good food, bad me mentality, good food, good me, bad food, bad me mentality, it causes a lot of anguish. So if this resonates with you, just start challenging that. Stop saying, hey, I was so good today, or I was so bad today. Don't even let that be part of your vocabulary. You are going to feel better, and you are going to feel better about yourself. And when you feel better about yourself, you are less likely to use food to escape the bad feeling. See how that works? It's awesome. Okay, block number two. What if I change when I'm thin? So often this is sort of the opposite of another block, which I'm going to talk about in a second, which is when I lose weight, my life is going to be great. But block number two is, what if I change when I'm thin? Many years ago, I treated a young girl who was quite overweight. And, you know, I've talked about this several times if you listen to the show, about the day that she poignantly said, she expressed a fear that if she lost weight, she would somehow not be herself. She said, I don't know who I'll be if I lose weight, but I don't think I'll be as huggable. That's what she said. She later said that she did not think that bad things happen to fat girls. So these are two reasons why she couldn't lose weight. She thought she would lose herself by losing weight, and that somehow she was staying safer by staying at the weight that she was. So for this girl, losing weight meant losing herself. It meant becoming someone else. So her identity was in some way bound up in her size. More huggable, more soft, more cozy, more huggable. And to lose that huggability in her mind was to lose herself. So if this sounds familiar to you, consider what makes you unique. How can you lose those qualities by losing weight? You can't. You are you. And those qualities are you, not having to do with your physicality. Now, the other side of the coin, like I said a second ago, sounds something like this, which is block number three. When I lose weight, my life will be perfect. And this is a very common idea. When I lose weight, people tell me, oh, I'm going to be confident. I'm going to be happy. People are going to like me better. They're going to treat me better. It's going to be so much better. Life is going to be so much better. And this is a very compelling fantasy, but it is indeed a fantasy. You will not be a different person when you lose weight. If you are shy, you are not going to be outgoing. You will be you. You will just be in a smaller body. You will still be you. You will just be in a smaller, healthier, presumably healthier, not always, body. Your essential personality will not change. You cannot change who you are by changing your physical appearance. So that's a block, because on some level we know that. And as long as it's the, hey, if I lose weight, I'm going to have a great relationship. I'm going to go dating all the time. I'm going to find my special person, I'm going to find my partner, or I'm going to get a better job, or I'm going to have whatever it is that's missing in your life. If if on some level you know that that's not going to happen, it's too awful to think, wait, what happens if I do lose weight and none of those things happen? What if nothing changes? So it's by staying stuck, it keeps this fantasy of change possible. And when you realize what's going on, you can challenge it, you can change. Block number four, I'll never be able to eat pizza, pasta, ice cream, sugar, carbs, candy, gluten, whatever it is that you think you can't have. Fear of deprivation, either actual deprivation or imagining a future deprivation, inevitably leads to binging. So if you think you cannot eat a certain food for some unspecified or prolonged period of time, guess what? You are going to have as much of that food as possible. It's kind of like the Sunday night syndrome. I'm going on my date. Where did that come from? I'm going on my diet. I'm going on my diet on Monday. So it's Sunday night and I'm going to have everything that I am not going to be able to have starting tomorrow. And what happens is you have a billion calories. Okay, slight exaggeration. You have a ton of what you think you can't have. And because the anticipation of deprivation makes you binge. And this is a cycle that then you go on the diet and then you go off the diet and then you have this like pre-started the diet binge, and all that does is create weight gain instead of weight loss. So the fear of deprivation is another block to weight loss. Block number five, this is how it's always gonna be. Catastrophic thinking, projecting the present into the future, that creates a dismal feeling of hopelessness. Hopelessness registers as a painful, dark, depressed feeling, which makes you vulnerable to using food to feel better or to escape. So none of us has a crystal ball to predict the future. All we have is the past and the present. So practice being in the here and now, and that will help you feel better now and maybe be more hopeful. When you feel better, you are less likely to use food to cope. When you say, oh my God, this is horrible and this is how it's always gonna be. I'm always gonna be on a diet. I'm always gonna feel not good enough. I'm always gonna feel like my body needs to change. Whew, that's a horrible feeling that you may use food to escape. So, you know, challenge that. Which one of these blocks resonates with you? Think about why. When you challenge your thinking, you can create new thoughts, and new thoughts lead to feeling better. When you feel better, you are less likely to use food to numb, distract, or express painful or upsetting feelings. It's how you make peace with food for good. Again, if you'd like to join me today, my number here at the studio is 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind. Okay, now we're going to talk about how to soothe yourself without food. So let me tell you about this one occasion that I was at the park with my daughter, and she ran off to play with her friends, so I just sat on a bench, and I noticed these two little toddlers playing in the sandbox. And they were scooping sand into the sandbox. They were digging and having a great time and squealing and laughing and, you know, doing the thing that, I don't know, they're 18 months, two years old, like little teeny tiny people. So cute. All of a sudden, one of them, the boy, he gets off and he just runs off holding the shovel, which apparently belonged to the other toddler. It was a little girl. And she, of course, bursts into tears. She starts crying. And up comes mom. Mom runs up saying, don't cry, don't cry. It's okay. Don't cry. So of course the little girl, she keeps crying because let's face it, little friend ran off with her shovel. Who hasn't felt bad when some little guy ditches you? That does not feel good. So her mom's like, don't cry, don't cry. Totally anxious about it. And her mom's like digging in her diaper bag, and she pulls out a box of animal crackers, and she's like, here, have a cookie. I wanted to say, no, 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 do not have the cookie. Do not offer the cookie. Do not do any of the things you just did. I restrained myself, which, you know, that took a considerable amount of self-control. Because here's why I was upset. When the mom handed the cookie as a way to stop crying, what did that little girl learn? She learned her feelings are upsetting to other people. Mom was so anxious. Don't cry, don't cry. It's okay, it's okay. She also got the message that either she shouldn't have upset feelings or she shouldn't show them. But if she absolutely could not stop those feelings, if she was crying, a cookie was gonna solve the problem. And I also realized that this exchange between the mother and the little girl replicated the internal process of binge eating or stress eating, of emotional eating. When you start to feel something, sadness, anger, something painful, something upsets you, instead of allowing yourself to feel those feelings, which, by the way, is the only way to get rid of them, as counterintuitive as it may sound, the only way to get rid of feelings is to actually feel them. Instead of letting yourself feel them and letting yourself cry, a part of you is like, don't feel it, don't feel it, don't feel it, have a cookie. And when you turn to food to cope or distract from uncomfortable feelings or attack yourself or your body in some other way, you're going to feel bad. And then when you feel bad, feeling bad is, you can't feel bad about yourself and simultaneously like try to nurture yourself and respond to yourself. Those two things do not happen in tandem. You cannot be like, oh, I can't believe I ate that cookie. And at the same time go, oh, it's okay. I'm feeling anxious. What do I need? You can't have those two thoughts at once. Inevitably, you know, hating yourself, being mad at yourself, does not lead to loving yourself and reassuring yourself. So how else to respond to yourself when you're upset? Well, there are some not so good ways of responding other than with anxiety, which this mother was anxious. Don't cry, don't cry. Like, she was freaked. Another parent might have been dismissive. I didn't notice that the girl was crying, might glance over and go like, you're okay, it's not the end of the world, you're all right. In that case, the girl would learn her feelings are not very much of interest to other people. Her feelings are dismissed. Or even if it's positive, hey, it's okay, you're all right. I myself have done that, I think, to my daughter who is here with me in the studio. I think I have done that on occasion. She's like, oh, like when she was little, and I think once she skinned her knee and she's like, oh, my knee, it hurts, it hurts. And I was like, it's okay, it's not that bad. And she said, it hurts, it hurts. You remember this, Kavana? She doesn't remember. she's laughing. And finally, she keeps telling me, it hurts, Mama, it hurts. And finally, I was like, oh, my God, I'm doing that thing I tell people never to do. I'm doing it. And so I finally said, oh, you're right, that looks painful. And that's when she stopped crying and said, yeah, it is, it hurts. Can I have a Band-Aid? Right? So just think about that. Translate that as emotional pain. When you acknowledge your emotional pain, instead of dismissing it, you're going to feel better. And then you don't turn to cookies or anything else. What other responses? An angry parent might go, like, stop crying already. What a baby. In that case, the girl learns her feelings upset and irritate other people. I mean, I don't think many parents would be that harsh, but they'd be like, you're okay. Come on, you're all right. Which you know, registers as, you're doing a bad thing. I'm mad at you for crying. Now, what is the best way to respond? With support. Here's the ideal response. Of course you're upset, little girl. It's okay to cry it out. Your feelings are hurt. That way, the girl learns her feelings are worthy of her attention. It is okay to express them. Other people are there to help her through. And of course, then you internalize that. And being supportive to yourself is the key. So, you know, first you got to identify the way that you relate to yourself. Do you get anxious? Oh my God, I'm feeling this, I don't wanna feel this. Do you get dismissive? Why am I feeling this? I shouldn't feel this. Do you get angry? What's wrong with me that I'm feeling this way? Oh my God. So first, identify, how do you respond to yourself when you feel something? And second, practice responding to yourself in a supportive way. And that this is why I created the helpful strategy of the VERY response. Talked about it before. I'm gonna talk about it again. VERY stands for validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. VERY. Now, to be honest, it really should be acknowledge and then validate, but that does not work for my acronym. So just think of the V and the A as sort of going together. Validate means recognize that your feelings and thoughts are reactions to a particular situation and that you have the absolute right to feel the way you feel. Like, oh, I got passed over for a promotion at work and my coworker got it instead and I feel hurt. I feel unappreciated. I am upset. Of course I feel that way. How else could I feel that given the situation? Sort of validation and acknowledgement, which is accepting the existence and truth of what you're feeling. This is a painful, upsetting, and humiliating situation. And I also realized that some of my sibling issues might have gotten stirred up since my brother was always getting special treatment. You know, like sometimes at work, people don't realize it, but our home situations get replicated at work. So we tend to, hold that thought. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're actually, hi, Nicole. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. I'm glad you found me. You must have seen the post on Facebook.
What's it called? So today I wanted to ask you about eating proteins and carbs together. Like, I know there are like a lot of different diets of like high protein, low carb, or like just eating like carbs, and I know none of that is actually healthy, but like, do you know scientifically, like, the body metabolizes the food differently if you eat like fat, protein, and carb all together or separate?
Well, this is really a question for a medical doctor or a dietitian, and it is outside, you know, really my field of expertise, which is the psychology of eating. However, I have spoken mm-hmm. to enough doctors and enough dietitians who will tell you that all of that, first of all, most protein has fat with it. Most people would say I don't know what most people would say, but a lot of them would say it doesn't matter. So behind the question? What is the question behind the question? If I eat protein with this, will I lose weight? Is that the question behind the question? Faster?
I guess it's more just like obsessing about like, you know, the newest diets or like the newest trend, or like, I guess it's just an obsession with losing weight. But
And
I feel like we've delved into that. So maybe let me ask a different question. I have so many questions.
Okay.
I like to chew gum before bed, like to not eat, but I feel like that's kind of become an oral fixation too. And I just don't know. I know that's not healthy. So I was wondering like what I could do about that.
Well, I think the answer to both of your questions is to really, we have identified why you have this preoccupation and obsession with losing weight, but I think you need to heal it. You need to deal with it more, because these are both, these are just both symptoms of the problem. The problem is that you think you're going to be a better you if you are a different weight. And that is the key. All of this chewing gum to not eat and eat protein but not mix it with carbs, or eat protein and carbs, whatever it is, all of these are weeds. They're weeds, they're distractions from the root issue.
Yeah.
And the root issue is, you know, it was very poignant when you, a couple months ago, when you told me about how you'd been an overweight kid and you never felt good enough to your mom because your sister was thinner and you didn't feel like you were good enough, and that somehow that has followed you into adulthood, and that's why even 2 pounds for you is catastrophic, 5 pounds, catastrophic. Because it is the difference
yeah.
between the acceptable, lovable you and the not good enough you. And that is the true problem. All these other questions are diversions from the true problem.
Yeah, so I think you hit the nail on the head, like you always do. But how do I heal that? I don't know how to heal it. I don't know what to do.
Challenge the idea that your mom was right. And again, not mother bashing. Your mom had these ideas, and you've talked enough on the show about some of her, the way that she even talks about herself, as if she has committed a crime by eating something. The way she hates herself. I think you said there's some Farsi expression that means, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm like dirt in my head. Like, let me go under the ground. Yeah.
Let me go under the ground. Let me die because I ate something that is not healthy. Or the message you got was what? That death is the answer to not being skinny.
Overeating. Yeah.
Let's just take a moment and say, whoa, how sad.
Yeah.
And when your mom.
Yeah, it is so sad.
Yes. And when your mom feels that way about herself, and you identify with that and then feel that way about yourself, that's difficult, that's sad, and you've got to mourn and deconstruct by challenging these ideas as you construct a new way of relating to yourself and food. And it's hard because being different, relating differently to yourself and your body and to food than your mom does may feel like you have disconnected from her.
Yeah, that makes sense too. That totally makes sense too.
So what are
my mom was in my mom was in Europe for like 2 weeks, and I live at home with my family. So a lot of time, my mom makes really good. She's a very good cook, and she makes like all this Persian food. And I feel like when she's here and she's cooking and whatever, I give in. I eat some of the stuff. While she was gone, I just felt like I was able to stay so much more fit because I wasn't like giving in,
giving in, even that giving in. So your mom says that she should go under the dirt if she eats the wrong thing, yet she cooks all this stuff for you. What a mixed message. Giving in. I think what you mean by giving in is, you were actually eating.
Yeah. I think I'm scared of eating, Dr. Nina. It's come to the point where I'm scared to eat. Like, if I feel hunger, like, I get mad at myself. Like, why do you feel hungry?
Notice,
hunger is not good.
Notice, why do you, you're talking to yourself in second person. What if you said, why do I feel hungry?
Yeah, I guess.
Say it. So try it. Give it a try. Try to say it in the same way.
Why do I feel hungry?
Notice.
Why do I feel hungry?
Notice,
yeah, it's different.
It's different. The way you said it, if I can sort of, why do you feel hungry? Versus, why do I feel hungry? You feel hungry because you are an actual human being who needs to eat on a daily basis. And that is, and yet you have developed some kind of shame around hunger, as if eating is going to make you not lose weight, in which case then you won't be good enough and you feel bad about yourself. So you've got to challenge this notion that you're a better you if you're a thinner you by 2 or 5 pounds, or for anyone else who's listening,
but Dr.
whatever.
Nina, I actually feel better. It doesn't make sense that I actually like feel better and happier and like.
Because of course it makes sense, because if you have this idea, I am going to be a better me. I'm going to make this up. Okay. Oh, I'm 112 pounds, but if I weigh 110 or 109, I'm going to be so much better. So then you get to 109 or 110 and you feel better because you've told yourself you're going to be better at that. And you've put in your head, hey, I'm a better me at that weight.
You're right. But that's kind of what I do with the jeans. I'm like, okay, when these jeans fit like loose and nice, I'm happy.
Yes.
So then they're like loose and nice and I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so sick. I don't even know.
Well, look,
I need to work on it now. Yes. I don't know what to do. I'm aware that like these are all harmful things. I know what the root is. I know a lot of it is like my mom, and like her mom put pressure on her to be thin, and then, you know, she internalized it, and then she passed it on to me and my sister, and like now I just don't know how to like heal from it. I don't know what to do.
I will tell you what you have to do, and it is, it's a scary thing to do, because you're going to have to get in touch with thoughts that you don't want to have and feelings you don't want to have. You're going to have to get in touch with how it felt to be that kid who didn't feel good enough because in her mother's eyes, because she was overweight or she was told she was over. I don't even know whether you were or you weren't.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I was a little bit chubbed as a kid, but then when I was 12, it was like time for my bat mitzvah. So I became a member at LA Fitness, and I started, I like saw a nutritionist, and then like, I think I was like 130 pounds and I went down to like 118 pounds and then like, you know, I was good. But I kind of like did that myself. It was like my own motivation.
No,
yeah. Maybe I felt like,
You did it yourself, motivated. You can't grow up in a family in which you have a mother who thinks she should be under the ground if she eats a carb, and then think that came from just you. Came from you identifying with this message that somehow you're better. Plus, we live in a society, it's not just all your mom, we live in a culture that says, hey, you should be this, and then you'll be better, a better you if you're thinner, which is a deplorable kind of message to send, well, all people, not just girls. Guys get it too, especially now.
Yeah.
Like have a six pack, have an eight pack. That's the way to be acceptable. So challenging some of these ideas so that your sense of self comes from within instead of from the number on the scale.
Okay. Yeah.
And that means that means you're going to have to give up the idea, because here's why it's hard. If you have the idea of, hey, kind of like what I was saying earlier, if you have the idea of, hey, all I need to do is lose weight and then I'm going to be a better me, then that's tough to give up, because all you need to do is lose weight and then you're going to be a better you, right? Except it's not true. It's hard to give up that illusion.
Mm-hmm.
But it also negates it negates everything about you that is good. You're not a better Nicole because you weigh less. You're just not.
Yeah, you're right. I'm part of this meditation thing, and they talk about how your body's just a vessel, and there's like a higher consciousness and like the divine within you. And like, I don't know why all of this is kind of reminding me of that. It's kind of like, maybe I should work on my, you know, my growth and who I am as a person, and like, you know, my higher consciousness, and like the vessel is really not that important. It's just kind of like an outer shell to like who I really am. Right. I don't know.
No, it's not too deep, but it goes too far the other direction. That's like, so what you're saying is, hey, right. Like right now you're all about the body. You're all about your body and your appearance. And who you are inside is sort of secondary. But so it's either that or the opposite, which is your body is nothing. It's just a vessel. And who you are is everything. In between,
those are
two extremes. In between is, hey, I am who I am. And who I am is not what I look like. But I want to take good care of my body and not constantly attack it or think that it needs to be different in order for all of me to be likable. I want to take care of myself and not be constantly in a battle with my body. Your body is you. It's where you live.
Yeah.
It's not just a vessel. So a healthy attitude towards your body is vital.
Yeah. I like that. I feel like that is the healthy place to be in between the two extremes. I guess that's going to be my goal.
Right. And to
Easier said than done, I'm sure, but.
In terms of what to do to get there,
yeah.
It's really important to recognize where you got these notions in the first place. It is not enough. Like people say to me all the time, what's it all about the past? I'm like, it's about the past because the past is where you learn to relate to yourself this way. The goal is to put the past in the past by recognizing how it is haunting you in the present. So you are not just in 2019, you are also the you as a kid who felt such shame for being a chub, as you put it.
Chubs. Yeah.
Yeah, little chubs. Right?
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful. I want to also ask you about like the being scared to eat thing, like just being upset with myself when I'm hungry. But maybe I'll save that for next time.
It relates completely. It's okay. I'd rather spend a little it relates completely.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Because what you're saying is that you have developed shame over your needs. And you have developed shame over having a normal human need. And that instead of saying, yes, I am hungry because my body, that I want to nurture and nourish, is telling me I need to eat something, you attack it. I shouldn't eat because somehow I should lose weight because that's the only me that's better.
Yeah. I don't know if this is related to you, but I don't know if it's okay to talk about sex on this show.
It's all needs and I wants.
The same thing.
Desire.
Like being brought up in a, Persian Jewish household, like with more traditional values, sex is suppressed. You're not supposed to have sex till you're married and this and that. And it's kind of the same thing. You're like shutting down your body's wants and needs. It's kind of similar, I feel like.
Absolutely. It's an attack on desire of all kinds. Any desire, food, intimacy, whatever, wanting. It's about shame over wanting.
Yeah. But we can want. I can want. It's okay. Right?
That should not be a question. Yes.
Yeah.
If you're thirsty, do you say, oh my God, I can't believe I'm thirsty? I drink
a lot of water.
Okay.
You're right.
It's the same. Bodily need. We have bodily needs and we have the needs of our bodies and we have the needs of our soul. We have, we have a need to connect. We have all kinds of needs that we then may think of as needy. And it's so challenging whether it's needy or having needs. You're still trying.
Yeah.
You're still trying to. If you feel shame over hunger, you're still trying to like deny your humanity and beat your body into some kind of thinner submission instead of, I'm hungry. What do I want? What is my body telling me?
Yeah, I feel like in talking about this more, I'm realizing that I do it like in so many parts of my life, it's not just food. It's like something I do everywhere.
It's an attack on desire and yearning and wanting. And all of that is part of being human. And when you try to tamp it down, you're not living your most human life.
Yeah. I don't know if this is related to, but I just kind of started dating a guy and I feel like there's some things that I feel like are not 100%. Like, I feel like maybe we're not on the same, I just don't know if we're like the best match. And like, I'm telling myself, he has a lot of good points, but I know that some of the things are not exactly what I want. And I feel like I'm shutting that out too. Like, Nicole, like you're asking for too much.
Notice
like,
the second person, Nicole, or the third and the second person, you're asking for too much.
I think it's my family, it's society, it's everything. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
like,
there's
well,
no
you know,
perfect.
he's becoming an orthopedic surgeon. He's going to be really successful one day. He's nice. He's Jewish, this, that. But, like, there's some things that really do bother me. And, like, why not?
Is he
Why shut
kind?
down the desire to have those things I'm actually looking for in a person? I don't know.
Yes.
But
Being an
it's the same
orthopedic.
theme. I feel like it's the same theme.
Yeah. It's also all about surface. Be with the, listen, I also came from a not a Persian, but a you know, Russian Jewish family. So, you know, oi,
You
is he a doctor or a
can
lawyer? My grandmother's voice is in my head. Oi. But what he does is less important than who he is. And you know what? If you're looking for a doctor, you can find one who it maybe if you can find one who has the qualities as a person that are that you're looking for, not just whatever
He's an
it is.
orthopedic surgeon.
Exactly. So pay attention to what you want in all areas, and things will start to change.
Okay, I'm going to be more cognizant of that. I'm going to be very aware and cognizant, and I will call back and let you know how it goes.
Wonderful. I look forward to that, and I will talk to you. Actually, I'm not going to be here on the 7th, but I'll be back the following week. So I'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay, talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay.
I appreciate you, Dr. Nina.
Oh,
thank you.
You're so welcome, Nicole.
Okay,
bye.
Bye.
Yes, reminds me of the when we want something and we can't get it, we turn away from it. It's humiliating to want something and not get it. It's humiliating to feel like, hey, I want unconditional love, but I'm not getting it. That's humiliating and shameful. It feels horrible. So we say to ourselves, I don't want that. Kind of like the sour grapes allegory where the fox finds these delectable looking grapes and they're hanging right out of reach. They're just like right out of reach. And the fox tries every which way to get to those grapes. You know, he jumps up, he climbs on something, he tries to get them in every possible way and finally has to admit defeat. He is not gonna get those grapes. And so he says, as he trots away, well, they're probably sour anyway. In other words, the thing that you really want, you don't really want. And that's a way of getting past the humiliation. I don't want what I want. I don't want love. I don't need that. I don't need food. I don't need what I need. Only it's not true. And so then you end up just getting your needs met symbolically with food anyway. Okay, we have a few more minutes. So I was saying about the VARY acronym, validate and acknowledge. Oh, I was saying that in our workplace, unbeknownst to us, it sort of replicates our original experiences in our families. So if you had like a really say a judgmental parent, you expect your boss to be judgmental, whether they are or not sometimes. Or even if they're not, we experience them as if they are. Or if we have a really kind, loving, warm parent, we're going to expect that our bosses are going to be kind, loving, and warm, whether they are or not. We're just going to have that expectation. And if you have sibling rivalry issues, then we tend to kind of re-experience that with our coworkers. So if you're in competition with a sibling, you're going to experience the same kind of competition in the workplace. Or if you get along great with your siblings and you go to the workplace and you have a coworker that isn't willing to get along great with you because they had a competitive sibling, you're going to be totally mystified. Like, what's wrong with my coworker? You know, he or she is just like, why doesn't he like me? Why doesn't she like me? So our expectations are formed by our original experiences and they're just transferred to different areas of our lives. So validate, acknowledge, and then reassure yourself and encourage and inspire yourself by remembering the situation, whatever it is, it will pass. Difficult situation will pass and you will feel better. And also keep in mind, past situations in which you were able to overcome difficulty. You were able to do that then, you can this time too. Remind yourself of all the times that you have met challenges, overcome problems. You can say something like, I've overcome a lot of challenges in my life, and recall them specifically. That time that I did this, that time that I got over the breakup, that time I got fired, that time I was sick, that time that I felt, you know, I didn't make the team, or whatever it is, all the times that were so painful and difficult, and yet you overcame them. And you say to yourself, and I'm gonna get past this too. I feel awful now, because let's face it, you gotta look at reality and don't say, oh, it's not that bad, other people have it worse, whatever. I feel awful now, but I'm not gonna be stuck in this horrible feeling. I will feel better one day. And the you, of course, stands for yourself. And when you are consistently responding to yourself in a supportive way, you feel better and you even feel good. You make yourself feel good by being responsive. And when that happens, you don't use food to make yourself feel better. That's how you make peace with food for good. So, and this is related to how to comfort yourself without food, which I'm going to start talking about. We have a few minutes, and I will finish talking about on the next show, which will probably be August 14th, I think it is. Yes, August 14th. I am going on vacation for the first time in a year. So how to comfort yourself without food? Okay, so think about how you talk to yourself. Here are some things that I have heard recently from patients and clients and callers, or people in my online group. They say, oh, I'm so mad at myself for eating X. You know, I'm so mad at myself for eating those brownies. I am such a loser. I have no self-control. Why can't I get a grip? What's wrong with me? I woke up feeling so gross after binging yesterday. I am disgusting. I hate myself. Ouch. Oh, that hurts, right? Can you imagine if someone said that to you? Oh, I'm so mad at you for eating all those brownies. You're such a loser. Why can't you get a grip? What's wrong with you? You are so gross. You are disgusting. I hate you. Can you imagine someone else saying that to you? Maybe that's how you talk to yourself. Notice how Nicole talks to herself in a mean second person way. So the way you, and if you're listening, Nicole, try to also catch those times when you talk to yourself in second person. Keep listening, because I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, because the way you talk to yourself impacts the way you feel, which in turn influences behavior. If you're harsh, you're going to feel awful and way more likely to eat for comfort or distraction just to escape your own mean, harsh voice. So changing the way you respond to you is absolutely key to change, to changing your relationship to food. Comfort food is actually about the need or the wish to be comforted by another person. And if nobody is available to provide comfort, or if the people in your life are not able to respond in a way that feels good, that is painful. But the good news is that you can learn to give yourself what you need to feel better. If you're turning to food for comfort, the main challenge is learning to respond to yourself with language instead of food. And remember, you can't stuff down your feelings. You can't starve them away. You can't purge them. You have to cultivate an ability to recognize, value, and respond to yourself. And that is a key factor to stop binging, stress eating, emotional eating. So first, choose your words carefully. So let's say a friend of yours ate brownies and she was really upset about it. Can you imagine telling her or him, I can't believe you scarfed down those brownies. You are such a loser. Probably not. What would you say to your friend? For starters, maybe you would say something like, look, I know you ate those brownies, but eating brownies is not a criminal offense. So please don't punish yourself. Please don't be so hard on yourself. Maybe you'd say, what's going on with you? What was going on with you before you ate those brownies? What were you feeling? What were you thinking? Did you tell yourself you couldn't eat them? And so you're just having them now because you're never going to have brownies for the next 6 months? You know, what would be on your mind if you weren't beating yourself up for brownies? Be curious, not critical. So one thing that you can do absolutely is remember this. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or a child, don't say it to yourself. Okay? If you wouldn't say it to someone else, if you wouldn't say it to someone you love, don't say it to yourself. That is key. And if you just do that one simple thing, you are going to see such a change, because often you don't realize how hard you are on yourself until you realize how hard you are on yourself and you realize how you've been beating yourself up constantly, daily, hourly maybe, and how that makes you feel, which is terrible. And when you feel terrible, boom, there's food for comfort. And so it's a vicious cycle. When you change the way you talk to yourself and about yourself, you feel better. Well, you feel better. As you could see, the theme of today is when you feel better, you don't use food. So I'm going to leave it there for today. Thank you so much for joining me today in this special Sunday edition of the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am, except for the next two Wednesdays when I will be out of town, I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. And if you miss the show, you can always find it later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, please leave me a review or a rating, because the more reviews and ratings that we get, the more it shows up in searches. The more it shows up in searches, the more people I can reach and help. So thank you. Stay curious, not critical, and I will see you in a couple weeks. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.